Serving the nation at blogtalkradio.com. This is Locks of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
Yeah, everybody have a show today. We had snow today, show today, show tomorrow.
I don't know if you want that on your credit card bill. You know, saying the WWE network on it. I mean, like,
your dad would look at that and be like, Dave, you have something to tell me?
That's the story that they still play.
It's unbelievable!
You have your LeBron in the play. It's like, do you really care about the James Jones at the end of the bench against the Haters?
Maybe the board, the MikeFrancesa.com, was just ahead of its time.
Pioneers.
Exactly, yeah.
Pioneers, if you will. Yeah.
We listen to this guy sit at a desk, picking his teeth every day, and all the dumb stuff he does. But it's not like we're changing the dial. We like Mike. You know, we hate Mike, we love Mike, all that back and forth.
Bingo.
Unbelievable.
The San Antonio Spurs, Dave. What do they say about him?
They're boring.
They're boring!
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big special Monday show. Good to have you with us here from Santa Monica tonight on a gorgeous day through the West Coast. Glad to have you with us here in the city. We talk golf tonight. We have Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut ready to join us at any moment. And it's quite a lot to recap. But before we start with sports, I think we begin with just the most shocking news development for life. Not just sports or entertainment or whatever, but crazy. And I'll explain just what it is and just right here. Robin Williams today died, apparent suicide in Tiburon near San Francisco. And really all I have to say is that I'm utterly shocked and dismayed by the whole thing and sad. Just more than anything else, I'm sad. I grew up watching a lot of the things that he was on. You know, cartoons like Aladdin, TV shows, stand-up that he's done. He'd been on Comic Relief with Billy Crystal and Whoopi Goldberg for such a long time. Like, I mean, that thing went almost two decades. And, I mean, those were pretty hard to forget. Dude was funny, and he was still active doing things even to this very day. He was going to have a movie come out, so on. I did get the word that he was battling depression and alcoholism in recent years. But even so, it was still just unbelievable to think that he would just die today. But, it really shows you how powerful and how great he was in a lot of movies, from Good Will Hunting to Good Morning Vietnam, to even lesser movies. Like, one I liked was Moscow on the River Hudson. And I'm sure there's, like, so many others. Hook, somebody mentioned. I think Andy in Seattle mentioned Hook. That's a good one. Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, he really left the mark. Yeah, I mean, he had his share of bad movies to go with the good, but he was just an unforgettable presence and personality. Maybe not for everybody. Not everyone was into it. Some people didn't think he was funny, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to really criticize anyone who doesn't think it's funny. That's what humor is. Like, humor is subjective. Like, some people think it's funny, some people don't think it's funny. But he was, to me, just fantastic. And right to the end, he was hilarious. Like, Tom in New Jersey forwarded me a link to a piece on Robin Williams riffing on golf, a stand-up act, a bit about golf, the invention of golf. And this really brings this whole thing full circle, because we have a golf spot tonight. And I wish I could play some of that back for you, but it's on the internet everywhere. I'm sure you'll check it out. Look for it on YouTube. It's really funny. It's just amazing. The invention of golf spot had me in stitches. And so thanks to Tom in New Jersey for recommending that. It was pretty just amazing that it's over for Robin Williams' life today. I just not what I would expect, even despite the fact that he was struggling through all the problems. I know a CBS show got canceled earlier this year. Just unfathomable. So, you know, the outpouring of love universally for Robin Williams right now is, I think, something I didn't really expect. I didn't realize that he affected as many people as he did. I mean, everybody flooded Twitter with remembrances and condolences and just pure grief and sadness. I was impressed, really, by how much he touched many people's lives, did Robin Williams. And my mom must be just so devastated right now. And even my friend Jacob Rosales, who lives in the Bay Area, was talking about how, you know, San Francisco is just plain crushed. I mean, he was a San Francisco guy for so many years and continued to be big Giants baseball fan. And I just can't believe it. It's amazing that this is happening. You know, gosh, I'm sad. I'm really sad about the whole thing. But as we mentioned, he had one of his finer moments was when he did that spot on golf. Golf will be our subject today, and hopefully, if he is around in the afterlife listening to this podcast for whatever reason, he'll enjoy this spot. So let's get it started. I mean, we will start our PGA Championship recap, and to join us for that in on a most exciting, exhilarating, thrilling final round between Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, and even a couple others like Henrik Stenson, who was mildly a part of it, and even Ernie Els, who was in there. Well, Henrik Stenson was more than a mild part of it. He was a big part of it. But there's a bunch of people in the mix. It was just really exciting. So rather than waste time going over the details, I'm sure you saw it last night. I imagine, actually, I didn't. But I read the recap, and I saw the final hole through mobile. Really amazing. So let's get right to it. Let's talk about some PGA golf. Let's introduce our panel to make it all happen. We start with John in Connecticut. Again, really one of the most exciting rounds that we have ever seen in a major championship. John, how's it going tonight? And what's new?
Hey, Dave. Nothing much. Had a good time on vacation last week up at the beach. So back just in time to talk about some golf and some college football with you on Wednesday night. Really looking forward to that.
So, oh, man.
Kind of like, I guess, your co-host for the week, I would say.
I love it. Oh, yeah, you are the hard... And this week out of the year, you're the hardest-working man in show business. I mean, double duty for John in Connecticut. We'll hear from him in 2 days with Ron in New Jersey for the college football scenarios. I've been looking forward to that show, by the way, for like a month. I've been doing research on all the teams, and it's just going to be great. I mean, the college football playoff, it'll be exhilarating, really.
Yeah, I mean, I could not be more excited for the season. I hope we can... Each me, you, and Ron give our four teams that we think will be in the playoff. That should be interesting.
Oh, that's going to be good. And so there's going to be much to cover in that arena, in that area. It'll be fun. So thanks for joining us for tonight's program as well. We now introduce Mike in North Jersey to the broadcast. It is a telecast now. Mike, welcome to the program. How's it going tonight?
Hi, Dave. Hi, John. It's going pretty good. I mean, in the, 4 years now that we've been doing this, we've now had the privilege of seeing a tournament that's probably going to be written about and talked about for a very long time. It's this really was just an instance where you can say an era certainly changed or a torch was passed. And just to see Rory battle Phil and even Ricky Fowler down the stretch, it's one of those things that it's where sports just goes beyond the sport itself and it just becomes drama. I mean, I can't remember a major tournament as exciting or that had as big of an impact on the game, at least since I've been alive.
It has been truly a memorable, a wonderful, fascinating, and just like you said, you'll remember where you were when it happened. It was definitely that kind of special round. Usually you don't get anything close to this level of juice in a major championship, especially on the final round in the back nine. It was neck and neck the entire day, and it almost didn't happen because of weather. There was a 2-hour delay due to rain and other storms in the forecast. And eventually they got going. It was right around 3:00 Eastern time where the leaders teed off. And what a round it was. I mean, seriously, this is definitely as close as I've ever seen a championship round go. So let's go to John in Connecticut first for his thoughts on this most most incredible, breathtaking final round of the PGA. John, just what's your first thought out of the box? I mean, about this terrific round.
Yeah, this was the best major final round we've seen in a long, long time. And usually, I mentioned this yesterday. Usually, I would not enjoy a course that's, you know, where the players are shooting 15, 16, 17 under for a major. I like it to be a little tougher than that. Like, you know, 8 or 9 under as a winning score is usually pretty good at the PGA, but you know, with the weather, it just made the course so soft. But at the same time, it created just a ton of excitement with these guys just throwing it at the flags. I think the fact that you had such star power with Rory and Ricky Fowler and Mickelson, and I know Stenson, you know, he's really not a star per se to the casual golf fan, but he's, you know, he's ranked 5th in the world. You had the world's best players up there playing some unbelievable golf, going at it. I think we had, at one point on the front nine, at least 5 or 6 guys tied to the lead, and then it kind of separated itself down to those 4 for the back nine. So just an unbelievable tournament. I guess we can kind of talk about some of the particulars in a little bit, but I agree with Mike. I think this one will be talked about for a long time. And I'm happy to see that the ratings did well, because if you couldn't get into this tournament, even as a casual golf fan, I mean, golf would have no hope. Because this was just unbelievable. And I think, well, the darkness scenario almost helped it, because the guys were playing really fast, to try to get the round in too. So that definitely helped the whole drama of the event. So overall, just an unbelievable tournament. Saturday and Sunday, two of the best television viewing situations for golf that I've seen in a long, long time.
You know, that's really true. The weather delay actually pushed the coverage into prime time to a small extent. I mean, it was nearly 9 o'clock when it ended. It was exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we were due for a good major, too. I mean, the first 3, and the Masters didn't have much juice on the back 9. Bubble was, it was clear he was going to win at the 10th hole. Obviously, the U.S. Open was just pretty much unwatchable. Climber, you know, he was going to lose. And even the British Open, the Open Championship, it kind of got close. So you never really thought that Rory was going to lose that one. So we were due a major, and it certainly exceeded everyone's expectations. It was just unbelievable Saturday and Sunday.
And what a big win for Rory. I mean, Rory McIlroy with 3 wins in a row for the PGA Tour season and back-to-back major, in other words, 2 major championships in a row within the same year. I mean, that's a big, big moment. And I was trying to think of who the last person was to do it. I thought maybe Padraig Harrington, but I'm thinking of something else. And he's the youngest to get to 4 major championships, or is it 3? I think it was 4, and he was 8, one of the youngest for sure. This is a big moment for Rory McIlroy, absolutely. And, Mike, as far as Rory's performance and the field, you're talking about a round in which I thought maybe 4 or even 5 people had at least a share of the lead at one point during that day. That shows you how exciting and intense this really was. So, Mike, any further thought on that and Rory McIlroy's big win?
Yeah, well, quickly on Rory, overall, by winning that, he became only the 3rd golfer in the modern major era to win 4 majors by the age of 25, and the other 2 are Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. Now, I'm always a little bit leery of trying to make comparisons between players. I think it's a trap that a lot of times we can fall into. But now at this point, you do have to start talking about McIlroy's potential to be one of the top 5 greatest players of all time. I mean, he's got 4 majors already, and he's 25 years old. So, anyone complaining about comparisons between him and Tiger and Jack, they're legitimate now. There's no questioning that. As for the round itself, it was even more exciting than that, just forgetting about the ties for the lead. The fact that McIlroy clearly, I mean, this entire week, but especially in this round to start off, he did not have his best stuff at all. And at one point, I believe, he was 3 strokes off the lead because he started off at 13 and he bogeyed 3 and 6. So he was at 11 and Ricky Fowler had gotten a 14. I know Stenson had gotten a 14 at the turn. And then really what turned the round around, or what kept them in it, was at 7, Fowler birdies and McIlroy responds with a birdie. And then really the turning point of the tournament, which kind of set it all in motion, which really made the round itself, forgetting about the historical aspect of McIlroy's achievement, made the round itself so exciting, was Fowler birdies 10. He's got a he does have a 3-stroke lead, and then McIlroy hits 10, the par 5 10th in 2. He was the only player in the field on Sunday to reach the green in 2 with this low 3-wood that went 280 yards, skipped down on a day where the balls were hitting, landing, and just stopping dead. He just like hits this low-running 3-wood to within 7 feet, makes eagle, and then he's one off the lead. And then from that point on, I just felt, you know, he's going to win this. And it, just to see someone that is so talented that they cannot have their best game, that they can afford to basically, you know, not do anything on the front nine, which was the easier nine, and then on a very tough back nine win the tournament, it just speaks volumes to how talented he is. I mean, the only person I can think of that, at least I, well, of course, Jack Nicklaus could do it, but really, Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus are the comparison. Those are the guys that could win majors without their best stuff, and to see McIlroy prove that he's capable of doing that, it just speaks volumes about just the massive amount of talent he has.
It's incredible, and he's had that talent all along. I know that you've been really keen on his talent, Mike, and it's really was just a matter of it was seeming like it always was a struggle. Like, could he have the focus and could he have the drive to win? Those are the two things that I think he accrued in the last, let's say, 6 months, maybe last 10 months. But certainly, I know John made that comment about how his separation from Caroline Wozniacki. But, you know, I think it played into it somewhat. I mean, he's certainly going at a much greater pace than I can remember. It's been just thrilling. And you mentioned his work as he entered the back nine. I could not forget the way that he got it was a fairway bunker, so it wasn't really, you know, that steep or anything. But he nonetheless hit the ball from there. I think that was on 17. And it got right on the green, and you just knew, wow, I think he got that thing iced. I mean, that was – I don't even think it was just the green. I think he got it in the hole. I mean, that guy was really getting it done. I mean, that was impressive. John, just let's comment a bit about McIlroy in perspective. This is definitely a huge win. There's no debating that. Do you contend that he did not have his best stuff as Mike did?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's what makes this even more impressive. And Nick Faldo talked about it a couple times, that he just has this extra gear that he just goes into. Like, he just knows, like, okay, it's time to get going here. And it says a lot when I think he was 3 shots behind, I think, on the 10th hole. He was, I think, 12 under, and then the lead was at 15 under. Fowler, Mickelson, and Stenson were all 15 under. And neither of those three players could do any better than that. They all made a bogey, and then Nicholson got it back with the birdie on 18. But just think, if those guys had even shot one or two under the back nine, and granted, holes, you know, 12 through 16 through 17 is probably the toughest part of the course, but still, they couldn't do anything. And Rory played them two or three under, and that's essentially what won them the tournament. I saw an unbelievable stat that he was minus 13 the entire week on holes 13 through 18, and that's what won him essentially the tournament. Yeah, I mean, if Mickelson or Fowler or Stenson shoot two under on holes, 11 through 18, after they get to 16 under, Rory's not winning the tournament.
Wow.
So, great for him persevering through his poor stretch of play on the front nine and getting it together and making the clutch shots when he had to. And you knew once he birdied 17, the tournament was over. 18 is pretty much that's the one thing I don't like about this course. 18 is pretty much a joke of a hole. You put it in fairway, you're guaranteed to make a four. And I definitely think they should
to change that, because it's really not a lot of drama unless you hit it in the water or whatever. If someone makes an eagle, and the odds of either happening, you know, it's just I just didn't like how there's essentially he made that putt on 17 and the tournament was over. You'd like to have like a 500-yard par four for the last hole, but it is what it is. And not to take anything away from Rory, I mean, it was a terrific performance, but
you know that wasn't.
So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly, to answer your question, I guess, in whole, he certainly didn't have his best stuff, but he was clutch when it mattered on the back nine, and just more so than the other contenders, and it won him the tournament.
Yes, but and it did, and I tell you though, it was a definite real challenge from some of the golf's best, and I think of Ricky Fowler when I think of the back nine. And Phil Mickelson to a smaller extent, too. There are two things I wanted to say about them. I kind of want to break these down player by player, so we'll start with Ricky first. Actually, before we even do that, I want to go back to what you were saying about hole 18. Hole 18 was a point of contention in one other area, and we'll swing to Mike in North Jersey for this query. But if you remember, the daylight was really running out. And this is something that TV doesn't really show you as effectively, because they actually have the ability to bring more light from less light in their cameras. But it was really running out. Like it was almost like dark. And on hole 18, they had to play much faster, as you mentioned, John. But what it also yielded was a very awkward situation. You had Rory McIlroy and Weisberger. Yeah, Bernd Weisberger. They both come on, and they're basically on the hole about the same time that Ricky and Phil are. So they decide to hit as a foursome off the tee, but it gets a little awkward on the 18th hole, because whereas most people would expect, all right, well, they all hit their tee shot. Let's see Ricky and Phil finish it out. Instead, inexplicably, they have both Weisberger and McIlroy hit the approach shot next. So it just used all sorts of chaos and confusion for a moment there. Was that the right strategy? Was there a goof there in the middle of that? And did it ultimately affect the outcome? I don't necessarily think it affected the outcome, but we'll look at Mike in North Jersey's opinion on all this. Your thoughts on hole 18?
Well, they were in a very tough situation. The one big mistake PGA of America made for that Sunday is they should have pushed the tee times up at least an hour, maybe 2 hours, with the chance of rain. That way, with the delay, they could have gotten them in before the darkness came, because you really did not want that tournament to end on a Monday. It would have just killed all the juice. And, yeah, you know, it creates an issue, because I know that Mickelson and Fowler, even though they may not have admitted to it, if they go up there and they make an eagle, they put pressure on McIlroy to make a birdie. But at the same time, then, because the daylight's running out, you know, if I'm McIlroy and I have daylight, what I'm doing is I'm literally waiting for them to finish the hole before I tee off. But he doesn't really have that option, because literally they're running out of daylight by the second. So, you know, it didn't affect the outcome of the tournament. That's the good thing, but that wasn't very well organized at the end there. It was better than not getting it in, though, because if it had gotten too dark, if there was any chance of, you know, blowing it on account of the light, you know, you wouldn't want to see that happen, and it would have been very bad for the sport. So not a good situation, but they weren't in a good situation to begin with.
Yeah, an unenviable position for the PGA of America and the tournament. It's in the tournament at Valhalla to be put in that spot. So, you know, you definitely are pressed, and I can understand that. Obviously, you're not going to have a complete plan necessarily mapped out, but I do think that it could have been handled better. John, your thoughts about the relative chaos in hole number 18.
Yeah, I mean, I can't add much more than what Mike said. I mean, you know, it didn't affect the outcome of the tournament, I think, either way. So I think they did the right thing, and he's absolutely right when he says it would have killed the tournament. Imagine if they had to come back
tomorrow or this morning to play, you know, one hole. I mean, it's just they couldn't do that. I mean, that would have been the worst thing for the game of golf at that point. I think Faldo or someone had a suggestion that everyone in the crowd should have held up their cell phones and put on their flashlight. That would have had enough light if everyone did that. I played all those guys under the lights on Monday night on those, you know, those courses out west. But it didn't affect the outcome, and they certainly had to do that because it would have been a disaster for golf. It would have been a joke, really, to finish one hole this morning. So I think they got it right in the end.
Well, I mean, the end result is what we wanted. I mean, it would have, as you mentioned, it's with only one hole to go, it would have been an absolute shame to carry it over on a Monday. That would have been really brutal. So, it wasn't the best planned execution, but they still got it in, and that's what's most important. And I think it ultimately, as you all have said, it probably did not affect the true outcome by that much. So, I mean, it kind of sucked for Ricky and Phil for a bit there. But at the end of the day, I still think that this was McIlroy's tournament to win, and he still won it. So that was the story. Two other stories between the two runners up. I think I'd like to start with Ricky Fowler first. He just keeps getting closer and closer to majors. Granted, his finish is third as opposed to second in the Open, but he's finishing top five a lot lately. And that really speaks well to him and his progression as a legit PGA golfer. I mean, that's pretty good. He said that this one was more frustrating of a finish after the, you know, after the round than the finish at the Open Championship just a month or two ago. So that's interesting to hear. But I don't think there's any reason to be upset if you're Ricky Fowler long term. He is getting close to a major. I think he could be any moment now, he could be ready to go. I like what he's been up to. John, let's go start with Mike, actually. Mike, your thoughts about Ricky Fowler's performance on this particular weekend?
Well, it's no surprise that he was more upset about this than the British Open, because the British Open, he had this huge deficit to start with. And in this tournament, he had the lead on the back nine.
Yep.
To himself, and really, from after the 10th hole, which he birdied, he played the last eight holes one over. So I can see why he's upset about it. And here's a really interesting fact: is that by finishing the top five in all four majors, that's only been done in four seasons. Since 1934, and it was done twice by Tiger Woods and twice by Jack Nicklaus. Now, wow. Both of them managed to get win in addition to the top five finishes. But that's really just mind-boggling that no one else has done that, and that Fowler could do that with only having one PGA Tour win. Now, what we're seeing with him is he's hitting the ball. His ball striking has improved so much under Butch Harmon, and his distance has gotten. He's now a really long player, whereas before he was kind of in between, you know, long but not really, you know, a bomber. Now he's a legitimate bomber now. And on Sunday, he hit 12 out of 14 fairways. So, really, if he keeps going at this rate, you know, a major win for him is imminent.
It really seems to add up that way to me too. I mean, hopefully that's the case. I've just been impressed by what he's done, and Butch Harmon as well, for really transforming him into a very, very formidable golfer. I mean, top five finishes that consistently is impressive for any golfer, and it really is great to see him putting it together. John, your thoughts about Ricky Fowler on this particular weekend?
Yeah, I mean, not much more to add. He's really become a force in these majors, and certainly some credit his work with Butch Harmon. I think his image, too, is much better. He's not looking so much as a clown on the course with the all-orange outfit and the long hair. You know, he's trying to be a little more professional. Not to say you can't have fun playing golf, but he kind of was like a sideshow there for a little while, and he's really turning into a really good golfer and a professional at the same time. So, definitely good stuff to see from him. I could see myself rooting for him now
in majors, because I really think he's turned his game around, and I agree with Mike. I think if he keeps this up, I think he's got to be one of the favorites in every major that he keeps it up in. We'd like to see some more wins out on the regular tour, though, you know, because that's kind of where you get that experience of handling pressure and fourth round situations. Even though he seems to be doing a good job of it in these majors, he just kind of has to, you know, close the deal a couple times, you know, and just kind of get that under his belt so he can do it, you know, successfully in the majors. Because like I said, and Mike mentioned it again, he was plus one over those last eight holes. If he'd shot one or two under, he'd either win or be in a playoff. So I definitely have to kind of get that experience and close the deal winning these tournaments.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point regarding his play during the non-major portion of the season. It does stand to reason that he should probably try to improve in that area, too. I mean, one tour win in his whole career, that seems a little off. But I think it was Mike, or maybe it was you who said that, John, but let's go to Mike in North Jersey. You did mention that he brings his best stuff when he goes to major tournaments, and I wonder, what can he do to bring that kind of consistency to the rest of the season? Because I think just getting regular wins will help him get a feel for what it's like to be in contention in a final round on a regular tournament. So what could he do to go about improving that, or does he just keep doing what he's doing?
Well, you can't argue with what he's doing. Yep. I mean, listen, Vid, if I could answer that question really thoroughly, people would be paying me a lot of money for advice. But I guess my advice would be try to treat getting a tour win, maybe the next tour win you get, as a major, and then go from there. But if he keeps on doing what he's doing, he's on the right path. So I don't think it's really a huge issue.
Okay, yeah, and I think that's basically it. I mean, obviously he's doing something, he's doing a lot of things right if he's this close to winning a major this consistently. So for me, I feel like it's only a matter of time. And we said this once before about Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson this week, truly a sight to see with his performance. Once again, just exhibiting the greatness of the short game, as my friend Coach pointed out before we went to air. One of the best short game players you will ever see on the tour. And that really came to fruition. And it really put, when the weather conditions played to his advantage, had some great shots, really had just a remarkable sequence of one, what was it, up and downs. And I remember there was a shot, I don't forget what hole it was, I can't keep the hole straight, but it was either 15 or 16 or one of those, where he had the shot and it bounced off the pin. It was that close to actually going in. Phil Mickelson, and he's like, I'm trying to remember his age, he's like mid-40s, and he's still going toe-to-toe with the best of the best in golf. That is amazing to me. I don't know if that's a usual thing that happens with someone in his 40s in the PGA Tour, but he's not in the senior circuit or the Champions Tour. He's doing this in the regular tour. So Phil Mickelson still got it. I just think it's really impressive. John, how much do you think Phil Mickelson's got in the tank? I mean, what'd you think of his performance?
Yeah, Phil, say what you want about Phil. When he's in contention in a major, there's not much better theater than watching him. Just the way the crowd gets fired up, he gets fired up hitting good shots, and it's just really entertaining to watch. I think his presence really added to that round yesterday. And, I mean, he's shown no signs of slowing down. The funny thing is, he's a really streaky player. Like, when he gets on, like, these rolls like this, you could almost tell he was going to contend before the week, because I think coming into last weekend's tournament at Akron, the World Golf Championship, I don't even think he had a top 25 all year. He was having a miserable season. He was having a terrible week there, too. And then he goes just completely crazy on Sunday, shoots 61 or 62. Like, it's just all of a sudden a clutch for him. And he continues it here at the PGA with just a magnificent performance. Can you imagine if he had holed that shot on 18? Oh. That would have just been unbelievable. But still, 44 years old, still contending in majors. I think he's certainly got a couple more years left in him to get another major. I think once he hits close to 50, he'll slow down a little bit. But who knows? I mean, he's one of the most talented players of our generation, close to one of the best
one of the top 10, 15 of all time. I mean, he's an unbelievable talent. So as long as he, you know, keeps putting the work in, I mean, he has a passion for the game, which he clearly does. I think he's going to try to win that U.S. Open that eluded him. But he's certainly got some more years left in him. And, you know, for golf fans, I mean, it's just nothing like watching Phil contend in a major. And I think, you know, I really enjoyed it yesterday because I would have had no problem with any of those three guys winning the tournament, like Rory, Phil, or Ricky Fowler. So that was really enjoyable for me. It's not like it was, you know, Bubba was up there or Tiger or someone like that. And I, like, you'd really be like, no, I'll hit it in the water, you asshole. You know, you really just enjoyed watching all three of those guys play golf. And I think that really made it such a special day.
I agree 100% on that, by the way. I mean, all three of those guys were very easy to root for, just fun to watch on the course, and for the most part, pretty likable. I mean, I just think it's great. I mean, you really have the combination of youth and experience right there on that final, you know, those final four holes. Really great, and Phil certainly was a big part of that. I think it's just something that a lot of golf fans may take for granted. The fact that he's doing these great things and he's well over 40, I just think that's fantastic. I really think. And that 18th hole, as you mentioned, John, he was that close. He missed that by an inch, maybe 2 inches. Like, see, right here, I have it on YouTube. Like, this is how much he missed it by. Or maybe this much. He really did not miss that eagle putt by much. That was impressive. So, Mike, your thoughts on Phil Mickelson on this? Again, fantastic performance. And I did not realize that he was struggling this year overall, but did Phil bring it to another level in your eyes?
Yeah, well, we saw him roll back the clock. Really last year, he kind of rolled back the clock for a good portion of the year. But, you know, as good as Phil is, and I've always enjoyed watching Phil, I would put a little you know, temperance on our enthusiasm about him, because historically 44, that's kind of the cutoff point. I mean, I know that we've had guys win in their late 40s or been good in their late 40s. You know, Nicklaus won it, the Masters, at 46, but realistically, and I was actually just looking at Nicklaus's numbers right now, you see that Nicklaus really started to fall off in 1984, which was he was 44 then, and I don't know, I just don't know how many performances like that Phil has left in him, because he really left a lot on the table last year, and then just to put forth a performance like he did this week, you know, there's only so, like, maybe he can win the Masters once more. But at age 44, and considering how inconsistent he was this year, I mean, it was great to see, but I think if we're going to place money on it or, you know, think with our heads, he's really more towards the sunset of his career. But, you know, you can always, all you need to do at Augusta is get hot for 9 holes and you can win the tournament. But I don't think he's going to win the career Grand Slam and get that U.S. Open.
Oh, you know, the U.S. Open probably would be a lot to ask of Phil Mickelson at this stage of his career. That would be certainly, I'm sure for him personally, it would be just one of the, it would just be an absolute joy, pure ecstasy for him. He's missed it so many times, and not by much. And I still go back to 1999, Payne Stewart. I mean, what a moment that was, too. But I'm not even thinking of that. I'm just thinking, like, can he do major victories the rest of the way? I guess to put it another way, do you feel like this is his last big stand in a major championship? You are right. He's very close to that breaking point or that tipping point. Do you think that he'll have a round like this in a major again, Mike?
I think he'll have one more major for sure, where he's definitely contending on the back nine.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I could probably see one more, maybe even two or three more. John, what do you think about Phil Mickelson's, Phil Mickelson's potential the rest of the way? Could he do this again down the road?
yeah, I think he can certainly contend again in a major or two. Whether he's going to win it, that's another story. I mean, these
right.
guys are, you know, they're really, really good. And it takes a lot to win one of these things. But to say he's not never going to contend again in a major would be wrong. He's definitely going to be in the mix for one of these major championships one of the next couple of years for sure.
Cool. It was definitely a day of great success for a lot of people. And I will give a nod to Mr. Weisberger, or Weisberger. I think he's from Norway. Where is he from? Or I forget.
Austria.
Okay.
Austria.
These stripes confuse me. So the Austria. Okay. Well, anyway, he was. He certainly was right there with the rest of the field. But then naturally he fell off somewhat on this final round. But certainly kudos to him anyway. Also some kudos in order for two people. Ernie Els for hanging in there, although it probably wasn't really a true contention for him, but he did finish at minus 11, so even at his age, he's still getting it done. And Henrik Stenson, we both mentioned him at the beginning of the broadcast, pretty decent round. He was minus 5 in the final round, and he finished minus 14. Maybe not so much a big factor in the final three holes, but Henrik Stenson showing that he still has some flashes of brilliance in him. I'm still eager to see if he's going to get Sweden that major. That'll be an interesting watch. So, any thoughts about the rest of the field? We will save Tiger Woods for the next question. But as far as the other people in the field, your thoughts? We'll start with John.
I mean, Sense is impressive. I mean, I think my dad's a golf fan too, but he's more casual than I am. So I asked him the other day, hey, tell me who you think the top five golfers in the world are, the world rankings. And he got Rory and Adam Scott and Sergio, and he for the life of him, he couldn't name that Henrik Stenson was in the top five in the world. And I guess that's kind of, if you don't really follow golf that much, you wouldn't expect it, but it's just continuation of his unbelievable play from the end of last year. Kind of tailed off, how could you play as well as he did at the end of last year, but he's really picking up this game again at the right time with these majors in the FedEx Cup. And again, him, just like Phil and Ricky, he had to share the lead, and then he had just a horrible three putt. I forget what hole it was. And he's putting for birdie, and then he misses like a three-footer for par, and that really rattled him. He hit some loose shots after that, and that was pretty much it. The 18th was just a disaster for him. But overall, a really good tournament, and the way he strikes the ball, I could certainly see him taking down a major here at some point. As for some other guys, I mean, Ernie Els, really no pressure on him, from where he was starting. So a good job by him with a low score that he can still get it done after that embarrassing thing happened to him at the Open Championship where he, four-putted from 2 feet. I've never seen anything like that in my life. I kind of feel bad for him because he was just kind of shearing in that whole situation. Rory was like, come on, buddy, come on, hit your shot. Let's finish this here. He's like, just kind of holding up play. I kind of felt bad for him at that point. Whereas most of the other guys, there really isn't much to add. Jim Furyk choked on Saturday as expected. Let's talk about the Ryder Cup teams after because.
Oh, you must.
USA had no chance. Let's talk about the Ryder Cup.
We have to cover that. Oh man, when I found I just read a piece today that just got me. Oh my gosh, I couldn't even believe it. We will cover the Ryder Cup in a moment. But yeah, I did feel bad for Weisberger too. I mean, it's like you have all this drama between like three of the best, most exciting golfers in the PGA Tour, and then you have that guy right in the middle of it. Like, just get your shot, get out of the way, bud. I was looking at this. I thought the same thing. I did feel kind of bad. It's kind of just kind of like, we got to wait for this guy to get his shot. But he still was doing pretty well for the most part. I'm sure the other guys didn't mind at the end. So, Mike, your comment on the rest of the field. And, yes, we have some juicy details regarding the Ryder Cup coming up after this.
Let's see. A couple guys who probably deserve notice. Victor Dubuisson, he's a very promising young player, the Frenchman who just seems to be a wizard with the short game. On the 10th hole yesterday, he was short of the green and just in this impossible lie and pulled out. And I would expect some bright things in his future. Jason Day, I'm shocked I did not know that he plays a one iron. He's probably the only player on tour left that plays a one iron. That's kind of a relative past. He was in contention. I don't know if you want to say that he choked because he's had so many problems with that wrist and thumb that he has to screw with his grip all the time. So I'm not going to hold it against him. So hopefully he gets healthy. Anyone else really deserve notice? Colin Montgomery made the cut. I don't know how you can be that heavy and possibly walk around the golf course. But I guess that'll close my comments about the field. Oh, yeah, Bubba Watson. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Bubba Watson.
You're not going to take part in the long drive contest, and you can't put a driver straight because there's the burr on the club face.
Oh, man.
I guess he didn't have physics class at any point in his life. That guy is just, it's like he gets dumber by the day, everything he does.
Anytime you think you're going to root for that guy, you just read something like that or you hear about something like that, that really just turns it all on its ear. I mean, he wouldn't participate in that drive contest because he said he wants to concentrate on golf. But then, like, only a couple years early, he says that, oh, why are you guys taking it so seriously? I'm just here to play for and play for fun. Well, pick a lane. I mean, seriously with that guy. I mean, what a joke. John, I guess if you want to chip in with a Bubba Watson comment, but seriously with that dude, what the hell?
Yeah, I've got nothing left to say about him. He's just a complete and utter fool. So that's just all there is to it.
Yeah, he got his just desserts in this particular round. He had no shot at all. When you have to play with nuance and with strategy, he sucks. It's as simple as that. And so that I don't think he's going to – I mean, he's already like in his 30s, like his late 30s even. But or maybe mid-30s. I don't really see – the ceiling for potential for him much longer, honestly. Okay, so now let's get to the meat of this, the meat of the post-PGA portion of this podcast. And it begins with Tiger Woods, who, again, I don't know why he played. Why did he play? You saw him last week at Bridgestone. He looked terrible. His back was hurting. I even saw the two of you tweeting that you felt sorry for him. Like, man, he's really fallen. And then I was shocked when I found out that Tiger Woods actually played this round, and of course he missed the cut. He was not fit enough to play. What was he doing out there? I mean, Mike, your thoughts first.
Well, I have to mention what happened on Wednesday on the Golf Channel before we talk about Tiger Woods, because it directly involves Tiger Woods. He shows up for a practice round.
Yep.
And it's like the second he got out of the car with the sunglasses on, the Golf Channel went from spending too much time covering him to just turning into just something that you can't even call is basically like you take his biggest Mongo fan and just have them come up with the talking points for the Golf Channel, and that's what you've got. He can successfully play a practice round after, quote, injuring his back last week. His first back injury was real. That back injury at Bridgestone was bullshit. And I'm sorry, you're not convinced me otherwise. So, of course, he shows up. He can swing fine. And this is the day before the PGA Championship with Rory McIlroy having a chance to win two consecutive majors and reach all those marks that we talked about. And the entire program live from the PGA Championship is about Tiger Woods. And the conversation got to the point where they were talking about how he was going to win the tournament and how he was going to break Nicklaus's record of 18 majors. That is so asinine at this point. You know, there's less of a chance of that happening. He has a better chance of never winning a major again than he does breaking Nicklaus's record of 18. In fact, you know what? I'm going to say right now, there is a 0% chance he will get to 18 majors. He doesn't have the physical attributes that he once had that allowed him to dominate the field. And all you hear about is, oh, he intimidated everyone. Yeah, well, he intimidated everyone because he hit the ball 50 yards past everyone, hit shots no one else could hit. So, yeah, he had some clutch putts added into that. But once you take that away, you're not getting, with his current skill set, even last year, you're not getting four majors out of that because that's a Hall of Fame career. So just to have the Golf Channel talking about that, he talks about how he's going to win this week when he can barely swing. I mean, who are you kidding? It's just a complete joke. And unfortunately, what I think they're trying to do is they realize that he does bring in money in terms of people watching the network and advertising revenue. So they are just going to give you this bullshit theme that he has 10 more years left where he could 10 more years left where he's going to contend in majors. He's going to be 39 next year. That's bullshit. He has 5 years tops left. So they're just going to give you that narrative and shove it down your throat, and they're going to milk as much money out of Tiger Woods as they can while he's still under the age of 50. It's just ridiculous, but whatever.
It's, you know, it's one thing when he was still a viable player to be going down this road, but he's not even close to that at this point. What is interesting from what you just said was that you didn't buy into the fact that he was even hurt. Now, there definitely has been question about how legitimate some of his injuries are. There have been moments where he's been carted off the course all of a sudden, and you wonder whether, and it's never good to question injuries like that, but yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, I think that there have been moments where he wasn't always as hurt as he portrayed it on the course. I certainly can't speak to whether he was truly hurt or not in this instance, but I can understand your point of being skeptical about it. That's interesting. John, do you feel the same way? Did you feel like that there were some shenanigans involved with the way that he portrayed his back injury a week ago?
There have been times where I think that he's kind of embellished things. He, you know, was playing bad and wanted to get off the course, but I think last week at Firestone was legitimate. I mean, he hit that one iron on a par three. Like, he literally, like, hit it 100 yards, and the hole was, like, 190. He could barely swing the club. I almost felt bad at that point. Yeah, I don't know if you saw the highlights. It was unbelievable. So I do think that was legitimate, but Meg is completely right. They're talking about this guy winning when literally 2 days before he could barely walk. He didn't even swing the club. Like I said, he was hitting 190-yard par three. He hits his shot, and he just immediately grabs his back, and the ball goes 100 yards and barely makes the fairway. And they're talking about him winning the tournament. It's no surprise that he played poorly at Valhalla. I mean, it's just unbelievable. As long as he's not healthy, I just can't see the media still saying that he's going to win these tournaments. It's ridiculous. And Vegas must be making a killing. They're still listing him as like 15 and 20 to 1. It should be like 500 to 1. He tied with John Daly, for Christ's sakes, last week. He
yep.
only shot 5 over.
Yep.
What does that tell you? I mean, come on, or 6 over. I mean, this is just unbelievable. I almost kind of feel bad for him at this point. Just,
yeah.
When he's healthy, he can certainly contend, and you know, we can debate whether he can win, but he's not healthy, and he's, you know, he's in a bad place right now. And I think you know, his swing teacher there, Sean Foley, they tried to do a swing so he wouldn't have so much stress on his repaired knee. Well, now he's killed his back. And I think, you know, once you start going down the road with back problems, I mean, that's just, you know, you're really not going to recover big from that. And he's not going to make the FedEx Cup playoffs. He's not playing this week at the Wyndham Championship. And God help us if Tom Watson picks him for the Ryder Cup team. I will lose all respect I ever had for Tom Watson's career if he picks Tiger Woods to make that team.
You know,
that would just be unbelievable.
It doesn't.
Wow,
it would be a farce, a complete farce. I mean, golf would have just a serious embarrassment on their hands if that truly did come to pass. That's just a convenient segue, John, because we read today in the presser for, you know, Ryder Cup coverage, and Tom Watson was up there, And he said that Tiger Woods said to him, "I want you to pick me." Well, that's all well and good, but you're not good enough to play. You're barely even healthy enough to walk in some cases. I'm sure, I don't think that necessarily means that Tom Watson's actually going to do it. He certainly was playing a poker face with that whole conversation. But to even think about even that this is even a point of contention is just hard to fathom. It is obvious to anyone watching him play golf this year that he doesn't have the chops to make it to the Team USA team for the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup is supposedly a serious event. If you really want to win, you got to go with somebody else. As it is, it's going to be tough to pick USA to win. If you put Tiger Woods on the team, you can just forget it. I don't even know what the point would be of playing. It's weird. You guys got me going into this on that. I'm all ranting about this. It's crazy, though. But it's seriously. It's just ridiculous. So, Mike, this is a big moment for you here. Your thoughts about the would-be Ryder Cup selection. Will Tom Watson make the right call?
Well, just real quick, the only reason that I question the injury is that if you hurt your back that badly coming off of back surgery, why in the world would you risk playing the next week and possibly end your career when your whole goal is to get to 19 majors? But anyway, moving on. No, there's no way he should be on the Ryder Cup team. If he wants to be on the Ryder Cup team, what he should do is go over to Europe, play the Italian Open or the Welsh Open. They have tournaments there. Go in there, show you're healthy, and then I could understand picking him. But, I mean, it's just a complete disaster with the United States team. You know, Duffner's neck is all screwed up. Dustin Johnson is suspended for cocaine, but he's not suspended because the PGA Tour is about to have a whole lid blow off their suspension policy, and Vijay Singh's going to be proven right about that. So, I mean, if they pick him, you know it has to be from pressure from the PGA of America and their sponsors and stuff like that. And that would just be unfortunate. You know, it would be nice to just see us try to put the best team out there possible. But, you know, if they're going to pick Tiger Woods, what they should just do is pick Jack Nicklaus, and then Tom Watson can name himself to the team. That'll be the three captain picks, because that's the only way you could possibly, that's the only way you could justify picking Tiger Woods. Well, I'm picking the three best American players who are alive right now. You could argue Arnold Palmer, but you get my point.
Yeah. Jeez. And seriously, Tom Watson probably could play better than Tiger Woods right now in that particular spot. It's possible. I'm not going to say it would happen, but I'm just saying, like, that's just where we are right now with the whole Ryder Cup selection. I mean, similar situation with tennis. The state of domestic golf is, you know, it's getting better, but I mean, it's certainly not where I think the PGA of America wants it to be. So, as far as the Ryder Cup, first of all, just how heavy of a favorite is Europe going to be? Rory McIlroy on that circuit. I'm guessing that Sergio Garcia will make the team. He's been having a very good year, and on we go. I mean, how do you even compare the two right now, John?
Yeah, Dave, let's just quickly go through the European team. Obviously, Rory McIlroy, Henrik Stenson, Sergio Garcia, you got three of the top five in the world right there. Justin Rose, Martin Keimer, another major winner. And then you got some guys that are Graham McDowell, always a solid player. And so you'd say that McDowell is probably their seventh or eighth best player on the team. And then you got some young guys, Dubuisson, Mike mentioned, and then Jamie Donaldson from Wales and Thomas Bjorn. Those are probably their three worst players. Then you go over to the American side, and it's just bad. I mean, not only do our players aren't as good, they're boring. You got Jim Furyk, Jimmy Walker, Matt Kuchar, Zach Johnson, who they're just – they're not scaring anyone. I mean, Europe is going to the floor with us. Patrick Reed is hit or miss. He hasn't played good since the beginning of the season. Literally, and then the only three players worth anything on this team are Bubba, but who can root for him? So you're just down to Ricky Fowler and Phil Mickelson that you can root for on the American side. Come here, and there's like an article about the Ryder Cup team, and they're talking about the Washington picks. And when you look at some of these names these people are throwing out, you know what? Maybe you should pick Tiger. We're talking Steve Stricker, who's 50 years old and a vice captain, plays five tournaments a year to put him on this team. Dickie Holmes, I mean, what's he done lately? One guy throws out Ryan Palmer, Brooks Koepka. Who the hell? Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous. You know what? Pick Tiger. I'd rather see Tiger in his back get out than Ryan Palmer and Brooks Koepka on the U.S. team. I mean, this is ridiculous. Europe eliminated this event by 20 points. I mean, it's such a mismatch, and especially because they're playing it in Europe. It's just unbelievable. I mean, this could not be a bigger mismatch than this year. I should mention Jordan Spieth, so he's on the U.S. team. I can root for him, but he really is. His play's kind of tailed off towards the end of the year, but this is just bad, man. The American golf is we need some more depth because this is going to be ugly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we the Americans have some great. There are a couple of players who are just simply phenomenal, but there's not enough depth. I mean, when you have Patrick Reed. Jimmy Walker always shows up in the top of the FedEx Cup rankings, but does he scare anybody? No! He does not scare a soul.
Jimmy Walker's been number one on the FedEx Cup since, like, January. I don't think he sneaks in there in the top 15 every week and has done nothing. You know, it's just, well, I don't know. This is going to be bad. I'd be interested to hear what Mike has to say.
Yeah, let's give it to Mike. Your thoughts on this brutal mismatch of a Ryder Cup coming up.
I mean, it's just, you can't help but laugh. It's like the Europeans are going to think, but oh, well, we might have to put McDowell and Ian Poulter, who are two of the better match play players in the world, in as our captain's picks. And meanwhile, we're going over the likes of Bill Haas. You know what I'd honestly do? Seriously. I would just put Gary Woodland, J.B. Holmes, and find another guy who's absolute. Find another guy who, and Garrigus. Why not? Just get the three biggest hitters we have and bring them over there. That's why everyone else sucks. You might as well just get something. Get the three longest hitters, hitters that we have in this country, and just go with that. Or maybe you take Keegan Bradley and then two of the other ones, because everything else, I mean.
Yeah.
Chris Kirk, Kevin Na. Great, we're going to watch him spend 20 minutes lining up every shot, have his caddy line up every shot, and then knock it out of bounds. Oh, God.
I like Kevin Na, but you're right about the his pace of play. It is.
Didn't he make a 17 on one hole or something a couple of years ago? I'm not exaggerating.
No, I know.
It's unbelievable. It was like the Texas Open or something. He literally was so stubborn, and he just kept hitting it in the. It was like in the desert or something. He just couldn't get it out of the. I think it was kind of in the woods. I forget exactly what it was, but he just couldn't get it out. It was just unbelievable. And he got like a 17 or an 18 on a hole. So there you go.
Wow, that's pretty bad. Now, what would happen if, in theoretical terms, would we have a better chance if Graham DeLay were to get temporary U.S. citizenship from after coming from Canada and join the team? Would that help our chances, Mike? It's a Mongo question, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
It doesn't really matter. No. I don't think Graham DeLay's going to make the difference.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Well, what are the odds, John, on the European team right now? Shall we be laying odds on this?
I there's probably odds on it somewhere. I could look it up for you afterwards.
Okay.
I'd be shocked if this American team went over to Europe and won. That'd be the biggest upset since who knows what. I mean,
the miracle on grass?
It'd be like... exactly. It'd be like... You know, beating Michigan, I think it'd be pretty similar to that.
Oh, that's good. That's funny. Oh, man. Yeah, that's rough. That's a rough matchup. There's no way around it. I mean, look, I know that horsemen are going to be asking us, you have to root for the American team, but I mean, it's just hard to do. I mean, there's just not as much, identifiable talent on that team. So, any final thoughts about the Ryder Cup, Mr. Mike in North Jersey?
I think the best thing we can hope for is another Bubba Watson meltdown in Europe, because every time he goes over there, he's got about something. So let's just concede defeat and hope that he just embarrasses himself as fast as possible.
That wouldn't be a bad call. I think Bubba completely – and that I wouldn't put it past him either. I mean, obviously, he doesn't see eye to eye with Europe in the first place. It would be probably for the best if it happened. I mean, we'd at least have juice, right, guys? There'd be juice in that spot. John? Oh, man. Okay, so anyway, let's end it there with the Ryder Cup. Obviously, a mismatch of epic proportions coming up. I mean, I don't even think a Vid Mush could help the Americans here. So we'll move on. Okay, so the PGA season comes to a close, and I just wanted to look back and look ahead at the same time. This is definitely a season with many highlights. It was capped off by Rory McIlroy. He's really come a long way. Imagine where he was a year ago, and you were thinking, wow, is he ever going to put it together? And now here he is, the kid from Northern Ireland, now on his way to, well, you know, he could get the career Grand Slam. It could happen. I think he's so young, there's definitely a shot at it. So it's been a great year, and it's had its moments. It's had its less than stellar moments too, but a good time. So what would you say about the PGA 2014 PGA season in perspective, John?
It's been an interesting year. It started off, a lot of the guys that you would think would be winning tournaments kind of, choked and gave up the lead to kind of the lesser players. The majors really haven't been exciting. The first three were pretty dull in the final rounds. This one certainly, this tournament, the PGA, really kind of made up for a lot of the dullness throughout the year. The next couple will be interesting. Rory goes on these streaks. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him win two or three of the FedEx Cup events, assuming he's going to play all four. I think he has in the past, but he could pretty much skip the first one and still take it home. But I think that would be pretty disingenuous. I don't think he would do that. I think he'll play all four, but we'll see. So we'll see. It's you got one more event this week, the Wyndham Championship in North Carolina. You're interested in that, but then you have the four FedEx Cup playoffs, and we'll see what happens. And hopefully it'll be dramatic, and we won't have a Jimmy Walker, Jim Furyk duel for the FedEx Cup on a Tour Championship. Hopefully we'll get Rory and Ricky and Sergio in the mix. That would be pretty cool to see those guys battling for the FedEx Cup at the end of the season.
Boy, if ever there was something that would completely invalidate the purpose of the FedEx Cup, it would be Jimmy Walker winning the thing going away.
The thing is, he's in great position. He's first in the standings. He won more than the season.
McIlroy passed him, finally.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Oh, he did? Okay, good.
It only took two majors.
Right, exactly. It only took two majors to pass him.
You know why that happened was because they decided it was really, I understand them doing it, but counting the fall series, just these completely pointless tournaments to the FedEx Cup ranking, just screwed up the rankings for the entire area. If Jimmy Walker, he wins the prize.com open or whatever the hell it was, and the entire year. Who cares? Might as well win a web.com tournament.
The web.com tour. Just one
There's
notch.
Not much of a difference.
I've seen the updates from this web.com tour. It's like Sheeran meets other Sheeran. It's crazy. The PGA Tour app actually shows you this stuff, and it's just, it cracks me up. Oh, that's funny. It's true, though. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, Mike, In addition to this, any comment on the 2014 PGA season in perspective?
Day in and day out, really, until this last major, it was kind of uneventful. You know, as we talked about, the previous three majors were kind of decided pretty early on. But it's going to be seen as a year, really, when you look back, let's say 20, 30 years from now, you're going to look back at 2014, and it's going to be really, basically to be certainly the, I guess the McIlroy era already began in 2011, but to say it was really cemented in stone was 2014 for sure.
I would say so too. I think this has definitely been a year where, I mean, you know, they always talk about the breakout season from players in other sports, and even though he's already a well-established player with already a major or two in his back pocket, it still feels like a coming out. I mean, I'm not coming, that's a bad term, but you know, a breakout season of sorts for McIlroy. It definitely showed that, it reminded us of just how great he really is, and so I think that's a good description. So as far as your look into the future, what do you think what would you see as coming up for the rest of golf, in addition to what John mentioned with the final tour event plus the FedEx Cup playoffs? What do you see that you're looking most forward to in the months ahead? Mike?
Really just the collection of talent that you get to see play over the next few weeks and then the Ryder Cup. I mean, in terms of who actually wins the FedEx Cup, the way they come up with the winner is kind of, it's a little bit cheap. So I don't put much weight into who actually wins the FedEx Cup, but the tournaments, they produce some good fields, so they're interesting to watch.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that was the idea behind the FedEx Cup, to create some juice, you know, towards the end of the year. And I think from that respect, it can be do its job. So John, what are you looking forward to as we head into the fall season and into the end of the calendar year?
Yeah, I mean, as we've talked about before many times on this program, it's kind of hard to watch the last two events of the FedEx Cup up against college football and the NFL. I'm certainly much more of a fan of those sports than I am golf, even though I do love golf. I love my football even more. So it's kind of hard. I always thought that they should end it. The Labor Day, Monday of Labor Day, should be the last round of the FedEx Cup, but it's hard because you would have to compress the schedule even more than it already is and get rid of some tournaments, and it's the whole big thing to do. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. I'll certainly be into the FedEx Cup. It is a great field. You have pretty much all the guys playing it, and it'd be interesting to see how it all shakes out. So we'll see what happens. And then the fall series, I mean, you know, no one cares about that. The events are buried on the Golf Channel, and I still don't know why, you know, they're including that in the FedEx phone players. I can see the idea behind it. It's just poor thinking on the PGA Tour, I think.
All right. Well, it's been a tremendous year covering the PGA Tour Major Championships with you both. It has been just a great year of podcasts. A belated happy birthday to you, John, by the way. I hope that I'm glad that you had a good time. And I hear you are making your ascent into your descent into Vegas next month. Oh, baby. And you know what I mean, baby.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh, man. You going to do any futures wagers or anything like that? You know, like, you know, bet on the Packers win the Super Bowl or something like that?
Oh, God. If I did that, I couldn't live myself if I did that. So, no, I'm not going to be betting on the Packers. However, I will do something with college football because last year, it's funny because Florida State was kind of like, you know, 10th or 12th to start the season.
Yep.
And then that first game against Pitt on that, I think it was Labor Day night. They just crushed Pitt, and Jameis Winston was unbelievable. And I said to myself, you know what, I might just put 20. You know, I was going to Vegas the next week. I said, you know what, I just might put 20 to win on them to win the title. And I got there, and, you know, amongst everything, I forgot to do it. And I was like, it's never going to happen anyway. Of course, they end up running the table and winning the whole thing. So this year, I am definitely going to put some money down on a team. And obviously it can't be Florida State this year because they're going to be the heavy favorite. But I'll have a team for you. I'll tell you on Wednesday who will be my sleeper to win and who I might put a little wager on when I go to Vegas next month.
So, oh, I love this. I love this.
Yeah, kind of a teaser to tune in on Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah. You got to be there, fellas. Don't miss it. 2 days from now, the College Football Preview podcast, same time with Ron and John here on the program. All right, Mike, it's been, again, as I mentioned, your expertise really has been very helpful for us all, along with your expertise, John. It's been a great year of covering golf. Maybe not the most juice in terms of the actual tournaments. I mean, this one was, but the previous three, maybe not so much. But it nonetheless was a lot of fun covering these subjects. It seemed for a while that we were kind of losing the storyline with Tiger, but somehow he manages to stay relevant despite not actually playing well in golf. Tell him, you know, it's been a good time. I just wanted to thank you basically for doing what you do. It has been 4 years. Can you believe it's been that long? I mean, good times. It was good times the whole way. I mean, what have been some of your favorite moments? I mean, we're losing Chris Berman. We're moving to Fox. A lot of changes in golf. It'll be fun to continue this project as we go forward. As far as your travel, anything playing, anything going on in your life?
Right now, no. I'm just waiting basically on some administrative stuff from school to be taken care of. It's been, you know, basically if you get credit for something, it takes the entire summer for them to process it, and then I go from there. So I've just kind of been spending the summer in limbo. It's been stress free, but it's still kind of annoying, just, you know, waiting for someone to process like a degree form and stuff like that. So probably be moving on with my life in the fall. So,
okay.
Welcome to the real world for me.
Yeah. Yep. Work and all that business. So, all right, fellas. Well, it really has been fun. It'll be good to do it again coming up in a few months. I feel sad when this happens, though, because, you know, every year when we start our major coverage on the program, it really is just one of the highlights of the year for me personally. So it's been fun. We shall convene again someday down the road. But for now, thank you very much. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And enjoy the rest of golf however it goes. Guys, my thanks. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks.
See you soon, Mike. See you soon, John. Thank you very much. Well, that's our program tonight. Really great. Always tough to say goodbye to the golf season, but away we go. It certainly has been a great ride. But it's not over for us on the program in the city. We will be back in 2 nights. The College Football Preview with John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey. Do not miss it. We'll be back then. But until then, we'll see you next time.